You're tuned in to the Big Buck Theory. All right, guys, I got a great episode for you this week. I sat down with a guy who has been an outdoorsman his whole life, but just as of recently, he's really been bitten by the whitetail bug. And a couple years ago, he found an absolute giant shed. This shed had some circumference measurements around the 9-inch mark, I want to say. So just an absolute giant buck, some palmation going on. And he decided he was really going to try to go after this buck as anybody would, I'm sure. And it's a great story. He ended up sealing the deal on a legendary buck. A lot of guys were after that buck. A lot of guys knew of the buck. It was a buck that he named Hercules. And yeah, I'm really excited to bring you guys this episode. It's a good story, and he's a really great guy. So yeah, without further ado, Matt Heppelston. Man, we're rolling.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing real good, man. Just got off a long day of work, so I'm ready to talk deer.
Yeah, same here. What do you do for work?
So I am a geologist by title and by training, and I also have the title of environmental scientist, but I didn't go to school for that, so I don't know why they gave me it, but they did.
No kidding. Geologist. So what are you doing at work right now?
So I work for an environmental consulting firm. So what I do is I go and I sample groundwater. I'll sample soils. I'll take soil samples, surface water samples, stuff like that from rivers and streams where there's contamination, pollution of some sort. And I'll do that. But where the geology ties in is we also will drill wells and I'll log like bedrock and soil and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty interesting gig and it keeps me outside, which I like.
That is cool. You get to be outside and you get to probably see new country all the time, I would assume.
Oh, I travel all over the place. Some of my coworkers have been sent off to Hawaii and stuff like that. So we go all over.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. It is cool. I do like to be home for the most part, though, and I don't like traveling during November.
Yeah. October, too, probably, huh?
Yeah, I try not to. The problem is the spring and the fall are kind of our busy seasons. Mm. So I have to block off time, my rotations a little bit ahead of time, but I've been able to do it in the last couple of years.
Cool. So how did you get into deer hunting?
I've been basically hunting my entire life. My dad was a big hunter and his dad was a big hunter, so it's kind of just in the family bloodline. Mm-hmm. And basically as soon as I could walk, he was taking me hunting. He didn't introduce me with the deer hunting. He introduced me to turkey hunting. That's where I got my start. Mm-hmm. And you know, he'd be taking me out at 4:30 in the morning or whatever, and we'd be blasting AC/DC, Motley Crue, whatever, and going out to the woods, having a good time.
Yeah,
and he made it really fun. You know, he was really good about making it just a fun experience, whether we got something or not. And it helps that he's a really dang good turkey hunter. So mm-hmm. we were always in birds and had a great time doing it. But yeah, and then he got me into deer hunting at a little bit of an older age, only gun hunting. He bow hunted a bit, but that wasn't his passion. Mm-hmm. So I got a really late start with bow hunting, but deer hunting to me when I was growing up was, you know, you just go out and if you saw a deer, you took it, you know, mm-hmm. you'd build tags. And it was never really a chase for big bucks or anything like that. The biggest buck I ever saw my dad take, which was a corker at the time, but like we didn't even know about the deer. We didn't use cameras or anything like that. It was about 135 inch. I want to say it was an 8-pointer. It was really big, massy, kind of wonky looking deer. But I really, growing up, I was playing football my entire childhood. Mm-hmm. And I even took that into college and played college ball. I didn't really have time to deer hunt all that often, which so I became a big, big time turkey hunter because that was my off season from football.
Mm-hmm.
So I got really into that, and really it wasn't until after I graduated college and then the pandemic struck and I had all this time on my hands mm-hmm. that I got really super, super into the deer hunting more so than the turkey hunting. Turkey hunting has now become an afterthought.
No kidding. Yeah, you just all you think about is deer now.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't say it's 365 days a year, but probably about 8-9 months of the year for me. I do take, you know, end of April, May, June, I'm really not thinking about deer. I'm thinking about the turkeys and foraging and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the second July comes around, I'm hanging cameras. And mm-hmm. even when the season ends, I'm out in the woods scouting, shed hunting, you name it.
What position did you play when you played football?
So I was a defensive lineman.
Nice.
I was 50 pounds ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
caught
cool.
all that weight afterwards. But yeah, no, I really, in high school, I was really good at the offensive line, but I just didn't have the size to project out for the college game. I only played Division III. It was nothing too crazy. But I played Division III ball at McAllister College as defensive lineman.
That's cool, man.
I was battling with, you know, 300-pound bruisers and stuff like that.
Yep. Oh, I believe it. I believe it. Yeah, I played football. I love football.
Oh, it's the absolute passion. I'm obsessed. Yeah. I can't wait for the draft next week, but this isn't a football podcast.
That's all right. We can talk about whatever. I noticed from you, like, even as of a few years ago, you would be posting a lot of really awesome shed photos in the winter. That must be one of your passions, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. My buddy Ryan, who I hunt with a ton, he got me into the shed hunting. When I was growing up, I never really got it because I never really had the success. I'd go out, we'd walk for a while and get tired and never really found anything. And I wasn't really into the scouting at that point too heavily either. But ever since, like I said, the pandemic, it's my favorite thing to do January, February, and a little bit March. I know some people's shed season doesn't really start till March. My favorite times to be out there is right when they're dropping.
Mm. Right on the snow.
Finding them in the snow, there's something special about it. And I just think there's something with my eyes. The second the snow melts, I can't find anything, man.
Really?
Every time March hits and the snow melts, all my buddies start racking up their numbers. And I'm just stuck at plateaued at where I was at. I can't yep. find another one. I don't know what it is. Something with my eye, the way they stand out, the contrast of the snow, I really, mm-hmm. really find them a lot better. But I also, the way I do it is I just follow sign. Like when I'm going out after the season, my best conditions are you've got like 3 or 4 inches of old snow that's been sitting there for like 2-3 weeks maybe, mm-hmm. right? This is like the dream scenario. You get out there and you just can see, read everything like a book. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite time to scout. Now, obviously, kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt a little bit because they're wintering probably in different areas than they are in the fall or the summer or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you can still learn so much about what they're feeding on, where they're bedding, why they're bedding. Because you can get up, go right up, sit in their beds and look around and be like, all right, I can see what they're looking at. I can see why they're sitting here. The wind, prevailing wind's coming this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like that's really my favorite thing. It's that time of year, just getting out there and just covering miles and miles and miles. And that's where I found my most success with shed hunting is February, I'd probably say, middle of February.
Yep.
I get out there and that's usually when they're really dropping. You're usually finding them relatively fresh, which I like. Mm. But like I said, if you get that good snow, you can just follow them from bedding to feeding to bedding to feeding. All I do is I get out of the truck, I walk off the road, and I just cut the first set of deer tracks I find, and I just follow them because deer lead to deer.
Yep. How many miles do you average a day when you are shed hunting?
That's really variable. Mm-hmm. When I really have the time, I put in like 8-9 mile days. I know you talk about putting 16 mile days. I don't even know how you have time to do it.
It's like dark to dark usually those days.
I was going to say, usually when I get around mile 8 or 9, I get a little loopy. I have to sit down. I can't see straight anymore.
Yeah, man. Wow. It's like, I keep the peanut butter pouch in my pack, and I just squirt a bunch of peanut butter in my mouth and keep going.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even. That's one thing I'm bad about. I usually don't even bring snacks. I just bring a ton of water.
Yep, that me too. I drink a lot of water.
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing I've found on those walks is it's like you have to take breaks. If you don't stop, you just kind of lose your mind, and you stop, you just lose your focus. That's probably the biggest thing is when you're really engaged, you can feel it. You're like, all right, you're scanning the woods really, really good. You're seeing every little branch that could be an antler, right?
Yep.
But then you start to fade off as the miles pile up.
Yeah.
And you catch yourself like, I just walked 100 yards, and I'm not sure if I saw any of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're driving. You ever realize when you're driving sometimes on like a long road trip, and you're like, I don't remember the last 10 minutes at all.
Like someone was driving, it wasn't me.
Yeah, you're like on autopilot.
Oh yeah, no, and that's what I try to avoid, and that's why I'm impressed that you're putting on 16-mile days. I'm like at mile 14, I'm not looking as efficiently as I was at mile one. I'll tell you that.
I hear you. No, I probably am not either. But I usually the way I do it this time of year is I work all week, like Monday through Friday, and then I have Saturday that I shed hunt, and then I spend Sunday with my wife. So it's like I got one day. You know what I mean? So that's why.
That was me this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was me this year. I just got married in September.
Yep.
Well, I've been with my wife for 10 years now. But,
oh, nice.
Got married in September. And like this winter, the least amount of time I've had to get out ever since I really got serious about it in 2020, I have only probably put on about 70 miles this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you said, I get a Saturday or a Sunday every week for the most part.
Right.
And that's it. I'm not getting days.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. It's just, yeah, it's a balance. You gotta, you know, when you have a wife, you gotta make sure you're keeping her happy too.
Oh, it wouldn't be out. I'll be honest. When I shot my big one this year, I think she might've been more happy than I was.
Well, that's good. You got a supportive wife then.
Oh, cause she was getting me back.
Oh, not that she was interested in your passion. She just wanted you back for selfish reasons.
Oh, yeah. I think she was sick of hearing the name Hercules, I think.
Oh, man. Well, this is a great segue into one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. You shot an absolute mega giant buck last year. It ended up being the number one buck out of Massachusetts last year. Am I right with that?
I believe number one typical, at least that's been reported to Northeast Big Buck Club, but there was a non-typical that actually beat him out by about 5 or 6 inches, I think.
Wow. So the number one typical, though, and he is just an absolute giant.
Freak of nature.
Freak of nature.
The buck of a life.
Oh, yeah.
Buck of 10 lifetimes.
Yeah. Let's hear the stats on him. What did he weigh? What did he score? Give me some of those circumference measurements on his main beams because they're friggin' amazing.
I'll have to pull up the circumference measurements. But in the meantime, he weighed 175 pounds almost on the nose.
Yep.
Bit rutted out.
Yep.
And he scored 171 inches on the nose.
Wow. Yeah. Giant.
And
yeah.
Some of those mass measurements, I mean, they were all over 5 inches.
Yep.
But I had one that was almost 8 inches, or 7.5, 7.48.
Oh my gosh.
He was just short of 50 inches in mass measurements alone on the official score.
He was like a part moose.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, if you don't mind me just jumping right into it.
Yeah, go ahead. I would love to hear the whole story right from day one.
So, I guess I'll start from the very beginning of that day. So this was February 16th of 2022. Me and my buddy Ryan, we had been shed hunting all over for a different buck that we called Poseidon. When we kind of got tired of it, you know, we'd put so many miles and we were kind of just exhausted. We just needed to try new ground.
Yep.
And so we just kind of went on Onyx and found a random piece of public that neither of us had ever ever step foot on for hunting purposes anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And we just said, I kind of outlined a little circle. I want a little loop I wanted to take. And we were like, hey, let's just go for it. And yep. We got out there and the first mile of shed hunting, we were in mountain laurel and stuff like that.
Yep.
And in the first mile, there was just tracks everywhere. And you're like, okay, this is clearly someone shed hunting because I don't know any hikers that just walk around and just weave through mountain laurel following deer signs. So you're like, all right, that's not awesome. Off to a good start. But yep. And really, only a half mile after that, I picked up a small four-point side, really small four-point side. And so I was like, even with all the pressure, I was like, all right, well, there's still some bone to be found in here. And we just kept continuing on, and we made another 4 or 5 miles in. I think that day ended up being about a 10-mile day in total. And we met up, we called it the up top area because we had to go up this ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of met up. We took a few minutes, took a break. And we could see there's snow on the ground. So we could see some where they'd been feeding. You could see the leaves kicked up on top of the snow. Mm-hmm. One patch over there to the left of us and one patch to the right. So we're like, all right, I'm going to go to this patch. You go to that patch. Sweet. So Ryan bangs a left and I go right. And he makes it, I mean, I shit you not, like 5 steps. And he just, Matt, what's going on? What's going on? And he goes, I think it's a moose antler.
Oh, my gosh.
And I look over, and I'm like, oh, my God, it looks like it is. And so we basically start sprinting towards it. Now, you know how sheds are usually tines up or tines down?
Yep.
This thing was beam up.
Ooh.
He must have dropped it into the snow, so the beam is pointing straight up into the sky, so you can see it from a mile away.
Wow.
And we go running up to it, and then we have the moment of realization, like, that's not a paddle. That's a whitetail shed. Oh, my. And it was obviously by far the biggest shed that either of us ever found. I mean, we were like little children losing our minds out in the woods. It was
for a good reason. For a good reason.
Oh, absolutely. And we couldn't believe it. We're taking pictures of it. And then we're like, oh, we got to find the match. And we gridded that place for the next couple hours. Ended up, I want to say, a little over 10 miles in the day, but we never found the other side. But we got that thing back. I mean, we were just in disbelief. You know, we didn't realize that they could do that. I mean, the mass measurement, the mass on that thing is just not right.
Right.
That one had bigger mass. That shed had bigger mass measurements than he did when I took him.
No kid, he was bigger then.
He wasn't bigger overall, but his mass measurements were. I want to say he had a mass measurement that was over 8 inches on that shed.
Holy crap.
And we had it scored, and let me pull up the numbers here. I want to say he went 155. If you extrapolate it out for the same score on the opposite side plus an 18-inch spread, he would have been 155 6/8. And the side itself scored 68 7/8.
Wow.
That was his 2021 rack.
Yep.
And so we're like, all right, well, I know where we're hunting next year.
Yep.
We obviously kept that in mind. And then July came around and we hung a bunch of cameras. We knew nothing about this deer other than we found a shed at one point in one location. That's the only point we had to work off of. And we put cameras all over the place just to try to figure this deer out to some capacity. Because I'm like, this is just where he winters. We could be nowhere near him for all we know. But the way it turns out, I want to say July 15th, we got him on camera for the very first time.
No kidding.
We were on him. Like, that was our first set. I want to say the first week of July, we went out and hung cameras. Obviously, we didn't check that camera until probably the end of July, if I had to guess. We weren't in there that often. Mm-hmm. But first, we had him on camera as soon as July 15th. And we had him pretty consistently the entire summer. Like, we ended up putting cameras right in the middle of what turned out to be his summer core range.
Gotcha.
So we kind of hit the jackpot on that, because it wasn't actually, that was about a mile away, maybe 3/4 mile away from where we found the shed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't right on top.
No kidding.
And it actually was that first area we got out and we found all those tracks. It just turns out that person was probably looking for him. So we had him on camera all July, August, and we even had he shed his velvet sometime between September 15th and 18th. We were getting him on camera at least once every week or two. And most of these were traditional cameras, like a few cell cameras mixed in, but up where we were, there's not always the greatest cell service. It's hit or miss, so you can't really use them that much anyways.
Right.
And so we got into it, and we hung some stands. October, he kind of – and back half of September and October, he was really hit or miss. We only got him on camera a handful of times, so he was moving around, and we weren't sure quite exactly where he was going. But I wasn't even able to get out there to hunt until November, but Ryan had the luxury of getting out there in October a few times. And on the morning of October 28th, he actually had – Hercules run some does right by him. I mean, I want to say he stayed out of range. It was like probably 45, 50 yards, but like enough to give you the shakes, right?
Yeah. No kidding.
And then November was even more sporadic with getting him on camera. And I got out a bunch of times and then I hadn't seen anything up there, at least at that spot. And then I came in there, I want it on Black Friday of 2022.
Yep.
So I want to say it was November 25th. And I was walking in and I walked by a camera that Ryan had set. And I went, oh, just check it while I'm here. And he was there the day before in broad daylight checking scrapes. Like he basically, he kind of did like a drive-by in the scrape, came through, sniffed the branch real quick and was gone. Wow. Like he was moving, and we actually ended up getting him on camera 2 hours later, almost a mile and a half away, checking the scrape down at a different spot.
Just cruising.
Just absolutely cruising in broad daylight. Those videos were from the 24th. I was in there on the 25th on an evening set, back in the spot where he was a little over 24 hours prior. And I had my climber with me. I got to the edge of bedding and I climbed right up. It was a nice mountain laurel patch and nothing for the majority of the set. And then with about a half hour of daylight left, I hear some like thrashing in the brush. It wasn't really walking. In my head, I'm envisioning something raking its antlers off of the laurel or something like that. Right. And so I let out a few grunts. And then I just hear more thrash. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I can hear him now working his way through the mountain laurel. And I realized right away what he was doing. He was using the mountain laurel to get downwind of me.
Gotcha.
So he was working that edge. And because I knew my winds were kind of marginal. And he was working that edge right to where he could catch my wind. He got to that point, winded me, and bounded off. I only by about 20, 30 yards. And that's when I caught a flash of his antlers. I went, oh no, my, it's him. And it didn't booger him too bad. Cause I heard him make another scrape before he walked off. So I'm like, all right, whatever. At that point it was almost pitch black, climbed down. And I came back in there on the Saturday, the next day with Ryan. And we kind of tried to pinch him around in that same bedding, just get on either side of him.
Yep.
And nothing all morning, didn't even see a deer. Which is, I feel like, the way the majority of my hunts go. I don't see a deer.
Yep.
And then Ryan midday decides he's gonna adjust his spot. So he climbs down. I think he only made it about 50 yards, and then he sees him stand up out of his bed. So he's now hunkered down on the ground. He's kind of helpless. He's shooting me texts. And so I tried to loop around and climb a tree that was, I was still probably a quarter mile away, just being on the safe side, just hoping that he'd either get bumped to me or if he would naturally work his way to me. But he just worked off and we never saw him again. And we, in fact, never saw him again in 2022.
He disappeared.
Disappeared completely. Like, we couldn't explain it until I found out after the fact that another hunter took a shot at him first day of shotgun, or one of the first few days of shotgun, right in the middle of his core area.
Really? Blew him right out of there then?
Yep. Blew him right out. I like I couldn't believe it because he was just completely gone out of the area that we had, you know, we had determined was where he was most comfortable. Mm-hmm. That's because someone shot at him, right in this core area. And I actually got to talk to this guy recently, and he had no idea it was his core area because it was November. He was assuming it was like a rut area for the deer. So he was looking elsewhere, trying to find the deer, not realizing that he had hit, he just hit the jackpot and was right in the right spot. And he just didn't realize it.
No kidding.
Yeah. So anyway, flash forward to 2023, same deal. We got him on camera even earlier. We got him on camera June 29th, right back in the same area. And one thing I was noticing was that he was hanging a lot tighter to his core area. I'm guessing, this is really a hypothesis, I'm guessing it's because he was getting up there. He was an older buck.
Yeah.
And I've heard from other guys that as deer get a little bit older, their core ranges really start to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm just, that's my hypothesis. That's my best guess.
I think I would say you're right.
He just seemed like much more of a homebody than he'd ever been. Like we were getting, like where last year we're getting on camera maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks, up until the shifts in September and October.
Mm-hmm.
Now we were getting him 3-4 times a week, and he was just always betting. We could tell he was betting on this knob on this day, he betted on that knob. He was just switching back and forth between different knobs based on the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all in the same little area. And he, and what was different about 2023 was he was, even when September rolled around and October rolled around, he was still in the same area.
Mm.
Like he did not shift like he did in the year prior, where he would, was basically gone for half September and very hit or miss in October. He was still right there.
Mm.
He didn't get hit or he didn't get hit or miss on us until November. That's when he was, we only got him on camera basically over a 3-day period around November 10th, I want to say, and to like the 14th when he was attending a doe. And that was the intel I was working off of the day that I ended up getting him. Because I knew there was this bedding that was incredibly tight to the access, like so close to the access that you'd imagine most guys would just blow right by and never even think about hunting it.
Yep.
And he was tight to that. He was tight on that doe, and you could tell he was just tending this doe because he really did not leave this bedding area for about 3 days. And this is all I'm seeing, this all in hindsight, because it wasn't a cellular camera, it was just a regular camera.
Yep.
And so I had done this bit of scouting. I was only in there, I want to say, a day or two after he was tending this doe. And I went, all right, I know where I need to be when I'm next able to hunt in like a week or so or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it was about 10 days. It was 10 days later. Yeah. The last time I got him on camera was the 14th. And I ended up going in there on the 24th. And when I had scouted, I found a little area where there was like just a nice little area for them to funnel out of this swampy bedding area. And it kind of, there was a nice little mountain laurel hump that I could set up on where I wouldn't really need to be in a tree stand, because I'd been in my climber for every single set for last year, but it was tough in there because it's so thick and with the mountain laurel and with all the lower canopy that you would climb and you're like, I have no shooting lanes. I can't see 15, 20 yards. And then you're like, I got to be lower. So I was just like being in a tree stand was almost not beneficial, if that makes any sense, because you really couldn't have shooting lanes that were far enough. So I wanted to be on the – my goal was to be on the ground that day as it was. But anyways, I get into the spot, and there was a scrape there that didn't look like it had been touched in weeks by the time I got back in there to hunt. There was a run that was beat down that didn't look beat down anymore. So basically I got there, I set up, and I gave it like – 30 minutes and I went, this just looks like crap. Like this doesn't look like deer have been in here.
Right.
And so I'm like, this is, and we're like 30, 40 minutes after the legal. And I'm like, oh, well, I have a camera right there. I'll just go check it. Nothing had been in there since I'd set it.
Mm.
Nothing. Nothing had come through. I'm like, well, screw this. I'm just gonna get up. And in my head, and I'm like, oh, another crappy hunt. I mean, I was having a rough 2023. I saw two deer in total, and he was the second one in 13 days of hunting.
Dang.
It was rough. Like, yeah. I had, like the season before, before, I was seeing bucks every time I went out. And this year, I'm like, now granted, I went all in on this buck,
right?
And I was almost exclusively hunting this spot, and the deer density isn't amazing. But I'm like, man, I'm not seeing anything. What am I doing wrong?
Now, were you passing bucks the previous year? All the bucks you were seeing, were you letting them go?
No, I was not. I would have taken about anything that came by the previous year, and even last year,
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to get my first bow deer under my belt. I was going to take a doe if it came by in range.
Yep.
Like I had never gotten a deer with the bow. I'd shot prior to, he was my 10th deer. So prior to him, I shot 9 other deer, but they were all with a muzzleloader or a rifle.
Gotcha.
I didn't even have a shotgun deer. I didn't even have a shotgun deer under my belt, but I was like, it was like such a big deal to me personally to finally get one with a bow. So I didn't care if a spike came by. Like I was gonna take it.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a bunch of missed opportunities in 2022 that I learned from, is really what that was. But anyways, where was I? I'll just hop back in. So I get up and I'm like, all right, there's this side that we call it the west side that we know he goes to occasionally, but we didn't really view it as part of his core area.
Mm-hmm.
So we really weren't in there heavy. I hunted it once prior last year, and before that I'd never hunted that side of things. And so I just like, all right, you know what, I'll get up, I'm gonna work into the wind so I'm not totally shooting myself in the foot. Mm-hmm. And today will probably be a scouting day, really. Like, yeah, okay, I'm still hunting, but I have a bow, so how effective am I actually gonna be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get up and I'm working my way west with a west wind. So I got the wind at my face and I am waiting. I was taking it very seriously. I was waiting. It was a really windy day, like gusty day, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just waiting for gusts. You know, I'd wait 5 seconds. Oh, here comes a good gust of wind. Let's get 15, 20 yards. And then the wind stops, I stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worked like that for about 45 minutes, roughly. I covered probably 600-700 yards of ground, and then I come up over this top, and I get down into this gully. And right when I get to the middle of this gully, I get the strong whiff of buck. I'm like,
yep.
Okay, well, I know what that is. In my head, I'm like, I've probably already spooked whatever buck it is,
mm-hmm.
but let's just hang tight. And so I hung tight. I started texting my buddies, just stood right up against an oak tree, just sat there for probably 5 minutes listening, seeing what I can hear, and didn't hear anything. So I'm like, all right, and I'm gonna crawl my way back, because there was a patch of mountain laurel and then some lower hanging hemlock trees. So it's a lot darker.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm like, let me just crawl my way back to that tree. So I belly crawled. From the middle, because I was right out in the wide open in the middle of this gully.
Mm-hmm.
So I belly crawled back to that tree, and I just sat down against it. And I'm like, all right, well, I know there's a buck nearby. I know what's in here. It could be a really big one. I'm gonna try calling. I mean, it's something that I have a love-hate relationship with, because sometimes it works out great, and 99% of the time it seems to scare deer away. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But I let out a series of tendon grunts, and I hear that same thrashing noise that I was hearing almost a year ago today, in 2022, coming from the next hill up at the other end of the other side of the gully. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. I'm guessing he was racking his antlers off of like a hemlock or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, all right, I give it 5 minutes. All right, nothing's coming. I'll try a snort wheeze. Was nervous about that. At snort, like grunting is one thing, but snort wheezes can be a little more polarizing, I guess, with the deer. They either come in mad or they go the other way.
Right.
And the second I hit the snort wheeze, I just hear just there's that cadence that you know, like that's a buck.
Yeah,
he's coming. And immediately I'm like, all right, I'm hearing him work his way to the edge. Oh, he's coming. I can't see him yet. second he starts coming down the hill, I just, my jaw hit the floor, man. I couldn't, I'm like, it's him, and it's him, and there's no way it could be any other deer in the world. I know without a shred of doubt it's him. Oh, my,
oh my gosh.
Just such a unique rack. And you know how moose, bull moose will kind of sway?
Yep.
When they're coming, when they're running.
Yep.
I swear to God, this buck came off that hill kind of swaying.
Oh my
God. With that heavy rack coming down the hill. I'm like, the second I saw him, my brain just kind of shut off, and I'm just like, all right, we're drawing the bow.
Yeah.
It was probably 70 yards away. I drew.
Yep.
Like, I'm drawing now before he gets too close, and I have an opportunity to, but I wasn't even really thinking at that point. I'm like, all right, just go time. And
yep.
I always expect, like, if this moment in my head, I'm like, if this moment ever happens, my main concern is I'm going to get the shakes too bad. I'm going to screw up the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it all happened so quickly that I was just laser focused, cool as a cucumber, just like ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in, he kept coming in. He was coming right in, basically a line to me, like straight at me, which isn't really ideal.
Yep.
And then he came to about what turned out to be about 35 yards, and he kind of turned slightly. So it was a slightly quartered two shot. And in my head, I'm like, all right, I've gone through the situation with turkeys a million times. Same, like, I know it's different animal, but like same concept. He heard something. He came down to the middle of that gully. Now he can see everything. I don't think he's going to come any closer. He's probably going to turn around and go right back up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right. It's now or never. And I put it on him. And I had a really, really tight shooting lane. It wasn't ideal, but I'm like, I don't know if he's going to come any closer. And I know I can make the shot. I released the arrow, and you know how everyone goes, oh, I saw his reaction. It looked like a great shot. Everything looked good.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you anything about the shot, man. I couldn't tell you a dang thing about it. I'm pretty sure I closed my eyes.
Oh, man. You didn't hear the arrowhead like, or anything?
Nothing, dude.
Oh,
I like blacked
gosh.
Out.
Yeah.
I was just beside myself that I even had the opportunity.
Right.
And I just look up and I see him running. I didn't even see anything else other than he's running. And then I immediately notice he's losing his legs. Like, I can see that he is starting to lose his legs. He makes it maybe 15 yards, turns around, makes it 5 yards back the other way, and just piles up right in front of me. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you freaking kidding me? And, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, whenever this happens, because I go crazy over things in the woods sometimes. Like, I get a turkey, I'll lose my mind. I was just in shock.
Yeah.
I was in disbelief at what just had happened, because it just happened so dang quickly.
Mm.
That I didn't get the shakes or anything until I started calling people. By the time I called Ryan, he said he could make out maybe every third word I was saying.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah.
Because then the whole adrenaline dump hits you, and you know, just lost control. But I'm like, I cannot believe that 30 minutes ago I was dejected scouting and I just dropped the biggest buck I'll probably ever kill in my life.
Unreal.
At about probably 8:50 in the morning, too, of all things.
Wow. Wow. Did you walk right up to him right away, or did you sit there and just like give it a minute? What did you do once you saw him go down?
I sat there and gave it a minute. I'm like, mm-hmm. I can see that he's down. I mean, from the time I released the arrow to when he stopped kicking was like 15 seconds. Like,
wow.
I was like, I know he's done. I know he's done. So I just started calling people, and because I had like no battery at that point, my phone battery, I hadn't replaced it yet. It was horrible. It lasted about an hour.
Gotcha.
So I was trying to call and get the cavalry coming before my phone died.
Yep.
Made the phone calls, and then I was like, all right, well, I guess I should walk up to him now. And I just walked up to him. I don't even want to talk to him. Like, I just want to admire him.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
I could not believe. And the shot was perfect. I mean, I got him right behind the shoulder, passed through. Well, basically passed through. It broke off just the fletchings.
Yep.
And, I mean, I caught everything. It was like, for my first bow kill, I was worried that, you know, with bow, it's very easy to mess things up.
Oh, for sure.
And it just, it couldn't have gone better. And so I walked up to him. I'm just like taking some pictures, like really, really shitty, like blurry pictures because I'm shaking, trying to take pictures of him. Yep. But I think I cherish those photos more than some of the like the more professional looking ones because it's just raw, you know?
Yep.
And and then I went looking for the arrow, and I didn't realize at the time that it was that it was stuck in him for a bit, and that he took it with him, and it was where he had looped around and kind of crashed for a second is where it fell out. So I ended up finding the arrow, and then I just waited for everyone to come, and I heard there was a small army that came and greeted me in the woods.
Oh my gosh. I would believe it though, man. What a buck.
Oh, it was absolutely unreal. And the funny thing is it was Black Friday of 2023, so it was almost a year today to my only other encounter with the deer, which was pretty cool. And he worked through that. I happen to know because of the cameras, he worked right through that same area like a year today. Mm. And I don't know, I lost my train of thought there. It was just the way it all happened. And it was not how I would have ever imagined it, I guess. I imagined it in a tree stand. Like, I was sat up against a tree like I was turkey hunting with my bow.
Yep.
Like,
well.
It was just so unique the way it all played out and how fast it happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the way you got him is very fitting. You know, you did something different, something that he wasn't, you know, wasn't used to, something that, you know, kind of caught him off guard. The sound that you made, the deer call was on the ground, you know, so it probably was more realistic. He probably even heard you walking a little bit, you know, so it was probably very realistic.
Yeah, you know, I guess I hadn't even completely considered that. My dad and I walked up to where he came from and found his bed. If I had taken like five more steps, he would have seen me. Like, no way he wouldn't have.
Mm. So it was perfect.
Just, if I hadn't smelled him when I did, I literally was going to walk right into him.
No kidding. Well, hey, those are good woodsmanship skills you had there to smell that buck and good instincts to put the brakes on, man.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I really think a lot of that was luck, but what got me there was a little bit more than luck.
Oh yeah. No, you had good instincts. I mean, that there's no two ways about it. You did everything correct, you know?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, gosh, it still blows my mind that I ended up taking him. Cause you know, it was my biggest deer prior to him. Like I think I said this earlier, I've really only been hardcore deer hunting since 2020. The biggest deer I had before him might push 100 inches.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong, I've been chasing monsters for the last 4 years. I've got all kinds of ridiculous deer on my trail cameras I could show you pictures of, but I'd never put it all together and pulled it off. And to pull it off and have it be my first bow kill on him, like, you can't write a better story than that.
No, you really can't. Now, so are you going to bow hunt from the ground more often now?
I don't know about that. I will definitely consider it as an option. Like, yep. I guess I never had even considered it as an option prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing is I'm going to continue to be mobile. Like, That's a big change I made going into the 2022 season that really revolutionized the way I hunt. Because I used to just be a sitter, and I would sit, like, if I had a hang on lock on tree stand, I'd sit the same stand repeatedly, like doing a lot of things that now I know are not overly smart.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I knew. I didn't used to have a climber. I never have had a saddle.
Yeah.
And so during bow season, I was very limited on where I really could go.
Mm.
And ever since I got my buddy, Ryan got me into the climbers. And ever since I got the climbers, now my biggest thing is if I'm not hunting fresh sign, I'm not hunting. Cause I don't have the patience to sit there for 5 hours and stare at nothing every single day. You know, like I've like really upped the amount of deer I was encountering in 2022 just by being mobile, change, even if I wanted to be in the same spot, changing trees,
just getting
a different perspective and always staying on the freshest sign I could find.
Yep.
That really changed the game for me. Cause I would just sit you know, areas that were like good funnels. You knew there were a good funnel. Deer will come through eventually. Or like I'd sit if there was an oak, if there was a good acorn year, I'd sit in oaks, so I'd be in the food. But I never was staying on the hot sign. I was just staying on what in theory made sense
right
at the time. And being on that hot sign has really just changed the game. Like this year, I guess because I went all in on Hercules, I didn't really see any other deer. I saw one other deer and I spooked it because I was wearing myself down and making bad decisions in the woods. And I basically wasn't paying attention that day, and I pulled out a bleak call. I don't even know why. I don't like those things really. But I was bored, and I was like, I've been in the tree for like 4 hours. There was like an hour and a half left of light. I'm like, let's try it. Whatever. I haven't seen it. At that point, I hadn't even seen a deer all season. I'm like, it can't hurt. Well, it can hurt when the deer is only 35 yards away and you just didn't realize it snuck up on you.
Mm-hmm. And you're in a tree and they're that close. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The second I flipped the can over, the deer was hightailing it the other way and I was just shaking my head. I about climbed out of the tree. I was so upset with myself.
Oh, man. It happens. Now, did you continue to hunt after you killed Hercules, or did you? Was that kind of it?
Well, at that point, I felt I owed it to my wife, to spend a little more time around the house. But I did go out just two more times. I honestly was like, I'm pretty satisfied with my season at that point.
So yeah,
I don't really need to go out, but I also used up a lot of my time off with work. But
yep.
I went out twice more. Once was just a push with my buddies. I shot a tree on that one. That
oh,
was good.
No. Was it a buck? Was it a buck?
It was a little either a fork or a five pointer. I don't know. I think it was like a five or six basket rack, or six pointer. But he only made it another 100 yards before my buddy got him.
Oh, no kidding.
When I pulled the trigger, I was fully convinced I smoked him. I just didn't see the sapling that was in front of him.
Yep.
And then I went out one more time, and this was at a whole different piece of public, different mountain. And I just went in, and I was like, this was during shotgun, I want to say. And I'm like, I have some old stories here, like old deer that I haven't lost track of because I was too focused on this one. I want to go see if I can. I want to go see if I could start those stories back up and find those bucks again. So I got in, I hung a couple cameras, and then still hunted around in the snow. But I didn't really get on anything too crazy. And there wasn't much snow. It wasn't really tracking snow, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. Now,
that's one thing I'm trying to really get into.
Were it tracking?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool, man. Yeah, I've had a couple of good trackers on the podcast. I don't know if you've listened to those episodes yet, but they'll tell you, you know, they got a lot of good tips and tricks for tracking.
I've listened to a lot of them, and really it's something I've done a few times, and my biggest issue is I go too fast.
Oh yeah.
And I catch myself, like I see, I'm like, oh, there's the bug and he's gone.
Right.
I need to slow myself down more, especially and see the indicators that I'm getting closer.
Right.
That's the biggest thing if I'm being critical of myself, because we also, that area that I'm hunting, we don't always get great snow. I mean, we don't always even get a lot of snow, you know?
Right. No.
Especially recently, it seems.
Yeah, but I will say one thing. I think if you're going too fast, that's better than going too slow, because if you're seeing them, you're in the game, man. So you're doing good already.
Yeah, I jumped up a few bucks the year or two prior. That like 2021, I want to say, mm-hmm. I jumped up a few bucks when we had good tracking snow, and I'm like, oh, I'm starting to figure this out, and I just haven't had a chance to get out with tracking snow since. I mean, obviously, I do it every single January and February for scouting, but I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not with a gun in my hands.
I had a question about that big buck. What kind of trees was he rubbing? Was he rubbing on big, huge trees, or what was he? What kind of sign was he making?
To be honest with you, he really wasn't rubbing on big trees at all. And I've seen that in similar areas. I've seen like big, like 6 inches in diameter trees that are just torn to shreds. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the sign in there was very underwhelming considering what was in there.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a ton of scrapes. There wasn't really even a ton of rubs, and most of the rubs were on smaller saplings. Now they were demolished,
right?
but they weren't on bigger trees. No, he didn't leave a lot of sign.
I've seen that a lot with top tier bucks. They really very rarely will they really pound like their core areas with sign.
No, I mean the year prior. We found this out after the fact because there's no way you could have a cell camera up where this is the area where we found his shed.
Yep.
The year prior, he tore it to shreds in the area where we had found his shed. He had complete, like, there were scrapes under every single tree, like 30, 40 scrapes. But this was far from his core area.
Mm-hmm.
It was just how we happened to know that he went there and hung some cameras. And the year before, he was up there for almost all of November. And then this year, he took one visit up there towards the end of October, as far as we know anyways. Obviously,
right.
What you catch on trail cameras are a fraction of what's actually going on.
Right.
But either way, I mean, I think I mark every single scrape I walk by in the woods
mm-hmm.
on Onyx, and I think I marked three this year. Like,
there was not
a lot of sign at all, no.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, especially if bucks are getting hunted, I think they learn that the places that they, you know, the places where there's a lot of sign that gets hunted harder, and it just pushes them out of the areas. And I've seen with big bucks like that, you know, he'll rub like a big tree, like on the edge of the road or like on the edge of a field or like right behind a house. And then like in where he's actually living, it'll be nothing.
Yeah. And I would say that's probably what was going on here, to be honest with you. He wasn't laying down that much sign. And I've heard from other people, from a few people that, oh, the big bucks lay down the majority of the sign. But I haven't found that to be true at all.
No. I mean, and every buck is different. Just like people, they have different kind of like personalities and whatnot. You know, like I've hunted a buck in the White Mountains that would rub a line of trees the size of your leg. You know, like just he would just everywhere mm-hmm. he went, he was really fun to hunt because everywhere he went, he just rubbed big, huge trees all over the place. But then I've hunted real big bucks that were, I couldn't even find a rub bigger than a pencil anywhere, you know? So it's just, I think it's just dependent on the buck.
Oh, and the size of the rub means absolutely nothing. I mean, everyone, cats common. I feel like that's become common knowledge for the most part. But
yeah.
I have a perfect example of that from this year. The only day that I hunted a different piece of land than where Hercules was,
yep.
I went in there and I had my my card reader and I had a bunch of cams in there and I was kind of just bouncing around at cams. I wasn't really doing anything crazy, just seeing what was going on in there.
Yep.
Trying to come up with a plan. And I checked this. I'm like, hey, there's a rub right in front of my camera. That's interesting. It was this tiny, tiny little rub on the smallest sapling you could even imagine. It's basically almost a weed at that point, not even really a tree.
Yep.
And I check it, and it's like a 130-inch, like, 10-pointer that had been in there 3 hours prior to me walking in.
No kidding.
You got to be kidding me. But, like, if you saw that rub, you're like, oh, a forkhorn made that. Nope. It was a legit big buck.
No kidding. That is awesome. Yeah, because, I mean, it's very true. A lot of times you see a little rub and you're like, oh, it's a spike horn, you know, and then you never know.
Oh, it truly can be a deer of any size. It's very hard to tell. I think the biggest thing is like the height of the rub, you know,
the rut,
or if you can see where tines are shooting off and hitting places that are a little bit further away than you'd expect. Like that's the smaller details I think you have to look at on a rub to really learn anything of value from.
For sure. Now, have you noticed that the mountain laurel is key to getting into the like home range of some of those big bucks that you're hunting?
For this one it was, yeah. This is really my first time really hunting mountain laurel areas because mm-hmm. most of the woods I'd hunted prior really didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd ever see him more than 50 yards away from mountain laurel at any point of his life. He was always in it in some capacity, almost always.
Mm-hmm. I bet you're going to see that a lot with a lot more big bucks too.
Oh, I mean, I bet it. And they're, I mean, it's just such perfect cover for them.
It is.
You can't sneak up. What are you going to do? Like, no, if they're in it, they are safe.
Yep.
That stuff is so loud.
Yep.
And it's all, obviously the leaves don't fall off like other things. So it's always there. It's just great cover. And they do feed on it if they have to.
Yep.
So they really have to leave it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really good thing to key on if you have it, you know, is that stuff grows big deer.
Oh, it definitely seems to. It sucks. I'll be honest with you, it sucks to hunt in it.
Oh yeah, for sure. It is terrible.
I had one night in 2022, I think it was November 26th or whatever, when I went in with my buddy to pinch that, to try to pinch that buck.
Yep.
We did a full day sit. And at the end of it, I knew I had a wall of mountain laurel between me and him, and there was a path, and I completely missed the path. It's pitch black. I've got my climber on my back. I'm like, oh my gosh, if he's up here in any capacity, he's so long gone now.
Yeah.
Trying to walk out of there. We're owl hooting at each other trying to get me through it because my phone died.
Oh my gosh.
That stuff can be miserable and can get you turned around real quick if you're not used to the area.
Oh, it can. It really can. Yeah, that stuff is gnarly. I've heard some guys call it Tanglefoot.
Oh, yeah. I know why.
Yeah.
I've taken more than my fair share of stumbles in those.
Oh, bears.
Into the mountain laurel.
Bears love that stuff, too.
Oh, don't tell me that. No.
Oh, yeah, they do, man. I'm telling you. I walked up on one sleeping this year in mountain laurel. He was, like, laid right down.
Oh,
like,
you kidding?
Yep, laid right down like a dog. Walked right up on him sleeping, eyes closed.
That's one thing, actually. This spot, you know, most of my spots, I got bears on them like crazy. I don't actually know if I even really saw much in the way of bears. A couple here and there, but really not many. Which I'll take because they like to chew on my cameras.
Yeah, they do. They got a taste for them, don't they?
They got a taste for anything that's got human scent on it.
That's
I mean,
true.
I'm sure if I drop my glove in the woods, I'm sure that they'll munch on that glove. You know?
Yeah,
they're wild.
So, what are your goals for this upcoming season?
Ah, gosh. I mean, to be honest with you, after this last season, I don't really know. I would say probably to get a mature buck because like, he really was. He might have been my 10th deer, but he really was my first mature buck.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to I've got a few others that I've got my eyes on, and it would be awesome to take one of them. But really, just getting out and honestly, maybe even enjoying the hunt a little bit more than I've been in the last year and a half. I've been stressed out of my mind, losing sleep over this dang deer. Grinding myself down to the point where I'm taking the fun out of it, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that is easy to do, man.
And I definitely did it.
Yep. That's easy to do, and especially when you're after a deer of that caliber.
I know what a good goal would be. Not since I just moved up into New Hampshire. Honestly, taking any buck in New Hampshire, I would be thrilled with.
Yep.
Any buck.
Yep, that's a good goal to have.
Because now I'm just completely out of my element, learning a completely new area. So that would be great. If I could pull that off, I'd be tickled pink, even if it's a four corn.
Right. I see you found a nice shed in New Hampshire this year.
Yeah, a decent 4-point side. I'd been covering all kinds of ground, and I did hang a few cameras this year. And the main reason I really use these cameras for is for inventory, because I want to know what's there. I want to know if it's worth me investing all my time into, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, I haven't been able to find up. I was in a couple pieces of public land, and they aren't terribly big. And I wasn't finding anything of more bigger than a four corn. I was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, there is ridiculous deer density, like deer like I've never seen where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, like there's deer sign out the wazoo, deer all over the place. My cameras are covered in deer, but nothing bigger than like a four corn or a small 5-point. I'm like, what's going on? So the day I found that shed, I was in a completely new spot. I'm like, I need to switch gears and I need to get back to bigger woods.
Yeah.
I really don't like hunting small pieces. I like having the flexibility to move around on these deer and chase these deer wherever they're going to take me. Right. Mm-hmm. So I went, all right, let's learn a new big piece. And that's what I did. And I got in there, I think I did about an 8 mile day. So that was one of my longer days of the year. And honestly, only about halfway through it, I come up this tiny little finger. I mean, it was like 3-4 feet of walking room, and then it just drops off on either side, like 20-ish feet, something like that.
Yep.
So I get right up to the top, and it was just sitting right on top of it. And I'm assuming he was betting up on that just because he can look over either side, and he's pretty dang safe, and he can bail off anyway.
Right.
So,
no kidding.
That I think I actually then I went out a week later, and I think I actually found a shed of his from the previous year.
Oh, everything, cool.
I mean, it's a small 3-point side, and the one I found that was from this year was a 4-point side.
Yep.
But just the way everything matches up, you look at the bases, and you look at the angles of the G2, and you're like, I think it could really be him, and it was only about. I think it was only a couple hundred yards away too. So
that's cool.
I don't know. I might be hopeful, but I think it's the same deer.
That's cool. Yeah, he'll be a good one this year. You ought to hunt him pretty hard.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the biggest deer I have any sort of information on in the area I'm living in now. So I'll definitely be hunting him, but I'll be taking trips back to where I got Hercules for sure. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like you got some good bucks to hunt.
Oh, I've got a few. You got anything good lined up?
Oh, yeah, some bucks here and there. You know, I like to bounce all over the Northeast, and I know next year I'd like to kill one in the Adirondacks. It's been a couple years that I've been trying. You know, just a few days every year I go out there, and so I'd really like to wrap my hands around an Adirondack buck. And other than that, I'd really like to go back up to Maine, and I'd really like to kill a 200-pounder up there. So we'll see what happens.
That's one I need to get. I actually had a few people that were shocked that that Hercules wasn't 200 pounds. That 200-pounder, I can't even imagine like some of these deer that are 220 pounds dressed.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What does that look like? Huff, man, like that's a cow.
Yeah, they definitely look different, man. Those real big deer, like, they just usually I can see it in pictures, like when people post pictures of deer, you can see it in their head, like the deer's head, like,
oh, yeah.
when they get that big, they just look different. Their heads are just freaking huge, you know. And but
mm-hmm.
Like my buddy Garrett LaPearl, he killed one in New Hampshire last year with a muzzleloader. It weighed like 220. I want to say it was like 222 or something like that. And just a friggin' monster. As soon as he hadn't even got it out of the woods yet, and he had posted a picture on Facebook, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a horse. That's like 220. And yeah, it's cool, man. I'd love to go back up to Maine. I've been a few times. I missed a really good one up there one year, and but I definitely want to check that off the list and get a 200-pounder up there.
Oh yeah, and honestly, now where I'm living now, that's a route, an avenue I should probably be exploring too, because I'm not too far away from Maine now.
Yeah, man. There's big.
I just don't know the first there. Thing about it.
There's big bucks in Maine.
Yeah.
Big bucks.
I don't hear too many 200-plus pounders coming out of Mass, or even, I don't know about Vermont. I don't know much about Vermont, but
yeah, not many. I've gotten one in Vermont that weighed 205, and he was definitely a special deer.
Oh, speaking of Vermont, did you see that someone just poached a doe in Vermont? Like,
yeah,
a
I did.
Week ago.
Yeah.
What with 3 buck fawns?
I know, unbelievable. Oh.
That's disgusting, man.
It is terrible.
I can't even imagine the motivations behind it, like doing something like that anytime, but like this time of the year and just leaving it.
There's sick people in this world, you know, and I hope they get caught, and I hope they have to do like jail time. They won't, but I wish
they won't.
I wish that they would get like actual like jail time because it's so appalling that people would do that and leave and waste a resource like that. But they do. People do absolutely. It, man.
I mean, if anything, what they'll probably do is they'll take their hunting privileges away. They didn't care about the laws before, so what's going to stop them now?
I know, right? Like, it's terrible.
Anyways, we don't need to talk about that anymore. I just know it was relevant and it just happened.
It did just happen. It's been going all over Facebook. It definitely and Instagram.
I saw it.
That's some people are just awful. I mean, I've heard of guys in the fall, they'd poach bucks, cut the heads off, and leave the rest of the buck.
I've heard of guys that do the whole crossbow thing with the spotlight out their window at night. I mean, I've heard more than a couple stories of it in the areas I hunt. I hate it, and I don't hear about these guys getting caught enough, which really sucks.
I know. It's like it's almost like we need to start like hunting the poachers. Like putting out cameras for the poachers and stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. It's too hard to do.
We need some vigilante justice.
Yeah, cool, because we don't have the EPOs. I want to say at any point in time there's hardly any EPOs on the clock. In mass, anyways.
Really? There's not many?
Not many. I mean, and I've grown up my entire life hunting and fishing in Western Mass. I have never made contact with an EPO in my life.
Wow.
Not once.
Yeah, that's not great.
Most people would be thrilled about that, but personally, being a law-abiding hunter, I'd rather have more encounters with them because then it would deter more of this nonsense that we have going on.
For sure. I agree with you there.
It frustrates me.
Yeah, me too, man. I wish people would just do the right thing, but unfortunately there's always, you know, did you see that story about a guy out west? He caught a coyote or not a coyote, but a wolf on a snowmobile. And he like duct taped the mouth of the wolf shut and he brought it to a bar, like showing it off to people.
What?
Yeah. And then he killed it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I did not hear that. That's insane.
Yeah. There's a lot of bad people out there, you know.
And yeah, I heard that some guy was poaching sheds out of season out west and he lost his universal worldwide hunting privileges for life, apparently.
Wow.
For poaching sheds. I guess holy it was like smokes. Thousands of pounds of sheds, and I know they have seasons out west for that, but I was like, wow, that's pretty serious.
That's pretty intense. Yeah. Well, I guess
like, we need someone to crack down on the guys out here that are doing nonsense like that.
That would
stop a few people.
You probably would. If the consequences were a little more steep, I don't think you'd see it as much.
No, I bet you wouldn't. It just sucks that it has to be that way. That people don't have the moral compass to just know, just do what's right and follow the rules. It's not hard.
Yeah, no, well, their dads probably brought them up doing shady stuff, and their dad's dad probably brought them up doing shady stuff. You know, it's just about, it's all about how you were raised and, you know, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely. No, you see it. You see it everywhere. You see guys that do some shady things in front of you, and it begs the question, all right, what are you doing when I'm not around?
Yeah, exactly. Probably way worse things.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. All right. We don't need to talk about
I know. The
negative sides of things any more than we already have, right?
No. Well, I mean, it has to be talked about, you know, and I think, you know, it's definitely good to talk about it because maybe, you know, hopefully somebody listening to this, you know, maybe they know who shot that doe and maybe they'll come forward with it. And I hope they do because it is appalling to me that. But yeah, we don't have to talk about it anymore. But
last thoughts on three buck fawns. Have you ever heard of a doe that had three buck fawns?
Triplets, man. At once? I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've definitely seen twin buck fawns.
I've seen twins. I'm not sure if I've seen twin buck fawns.
Yeah, I've seen twin buck fawns.
I don't even think I've seen triplets. Never mind triplets of bucks. That would have been such a boost to the herd around there.
Right. All
right. So hey, where were you going to take this?
I have a quick little rabbit hole we can jump down. So the reason why, and I've heard this from a biologist, but then I've kind of seen it in real life too, is the reason why bucks shift in the fall to rut is because wherever they hang out in the summer is where they were born. And where they were born, when they're a half a year old or whatever, when the mother of the buck starts to come into estrus, she puts the run to that buck fawn so that way they don't inbreed.
Huh.
So that's why, and then so that becomes habit for the buck. So every year during the fall, the buck ranges out to breed different does, not his mother or, you know, I guess sister does or whatever. And I've heard what happens is, like, let's say, you know, have you ever heard of somebody say that there's a buck that he just is, like, always in the same area and he never goes anywhere? He's just a homebody.
Yeah, I feel like I hear that in the smaller pieces more so in the bigger woods, but yeah.
So what happens is the mother will have the fawn, and then somehow the mother of the buck will end up getting killed, like either by getting hit by a car or get shot, like real early season bow season, and she never puts a run to that buck, and then he never ranges out because she never puts a run to him.
No kidding.
And he'll just stay kind of right in that area for his whole life.
That's insane. I can't say I've ever seen anything like that.
Yeah. But
that is, wow. That is really cool.
Yep. Yeah, so that's why they range out. That's why they do that in the fall.
And I mean, I see it. I see it pretty consistently with probably all of my bucks that I get on camera, like September in particular, right around the time where they shed velvet.
Yep.
They just dip. And sometimes they come back, and sometimes they don't come back until next summer. It's just right. Every buck is different, I found, but like they always, almost universally, at least where I hunt, seem to shift sometimes pretty dramatically that second or third week of September.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I find.
Yep. Yep.
And then maybe once again during the rut as well.
Yep.
I think there's so much randomness to the rut. I don't really credit. I don't put a lot of thought into what bucks are doing necessarily during the rut outside of, you know, funnels and paying attention to like when they're with a doe, like when a certain doe went hot, right?
Right.
Like obviously I'll pay attention to that, but like the individual buck's movements, I think they're so random that time of year, you can't put too much credit into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think you can drive yourself crazy if you try to figure out why they're doing what they're doing, because they're just wandering looking for does.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, they'll end up. I mean, I had one target buck. This is like probably the first target buck I ever had. But like, because there were half of my life I never even thought about target bucks, right?
Yep.
I was on this deer ended up being probably 2.5 years before I just moved on to a different location and ended up forgetting about him. Mm-hmm. This buck ended up on Main Street, and I was getting Snapchat videos. Hey, you know this deer? I'm like, oh, unfortunately, yes. Exactly where the deer is running down Main Street in town. I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
Yep. That wasn't a major town, but either way, anyone who drives by gets to see the buck I'm after just running around, happy as heck.
Being stupid.
Being stupid, not when I'm around, though.
Yeah, exactly. They got a knack for it. They got a knack for being stupid, like in places where you can't shoot them, it seems like.
Oh my gosh, don't they?
Yeah.
And you see all this stuff when you're driving around. You're like, oh, look at, oh my gosh, I can't believe a buck's chasing a doe through there in broad daylight, and you get in the woods and it's crickets.
Yep.
where are all the deer? Oh, they're all on Main Street. You missed the party.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, like talking about the rut and stuff is like, like one way I look at it is if you're scouting in the off season or whatever, and you're finding a lot of buck sign and, you know, it's maybe a lot of big rubs or scrapes or whatnot, and there doesn't seem like there's a lot of deer in that area. Well, what I've seen a lot of times is that would be like a good place to kill a buck early season. But the best, the best place to kill a buck during the rut is where there's a lot of does. So like, if you find
it, 100%.
Yeah. If you find an area where there's a lot of does, there might not be any buck sign in there, and it might not be a place where, like, you know, as a big buck hunter, you'd want to be, because there's only does on your camera. But hey, come second week of November, that might be the place to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. And I have a different buck that just makes me think about, like first off, when, like, I'll start with Hercules. Like Hercules, when he would shift, which he, what he did in 2022, he shifted up in a way that we really should have seen coming. And in hindsight, it made perfect sense, because we had all these cameras up in this area we called the up top area. Mm-hmm. And we were just getting ridiculous amounts of does on these cameras. Doe, doe, doe. We never got a buck in the camera all summer long.
Yep.
And then, of course, November, he spent his entire November up there, and we weren't there hunting. We were hunting down low in the wrong place where he had been.
Exactly.
We were in his footsteps.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, we've seen that. And then, I mean, I've got a different buck that's still alive that goes on like a 2 mile trip, a 2 or 3 mile trip into what I consider to be a completely different hunting area. Like, I'm hunting that area for different bucks, and I just keep every year around the same time, I keep getting this buck on camera. Yeah. Like, what are you doing there?
Yeah.
This is a completely different pull off, like miles away, and he just ends up there. He just goes where the does take him. That tells me. I'm assuming there's a doe that gets hot in there right around that time, and he knows it.
Yep. No, yeah, you're probably right. It's probably a doe comes in the heat there every year the same time.
Yeah. And he goes on this big trip, and he always comes right back afterwards, too. It's the funniest thing. He's gone for like a week, week and a half, and I'm like, oh, I know where he went.
Yep. Yeah, I think
he's going over there.
Like noticing like historical data off of bucks is very important. Like you said, with Hercules, you noticed like specific things that he would do year to year, and like you killed him like a year to the day of when you had an encounter with him, you know, the previous year. And I think that's not by mistake. That's probably a year, or it was a time frame where he was on his feet, you know. And
yeah.
And I've seen that with bucks on cameras. You know, they'll be day walking right around the same time every year, you know, or they'll be cruising this certain ridge right around the same time every year. And it's, you know, they'll do the same stuff year to year.
Yeah. I mean, I've got one buck at this different spot that I'm no longer in. We call them Blades. He's got the funkiest rack. It shoots way up. When we first got him, we got him on camera 3 straight years, one time every year.
Yep.
And his rack, when we first got him, it was a gigantic fork. It just shot way, way, way up, and then he became like a 6-pointer, and then he has like a couple kickers, I want to say, and he's just super tall, weird looking rack, just super funky, all kinds of character. And like I want to say like one of the last weeks in October, every single year, this deer swings right through, and I always seem to catch him on camera, even if it's a different camera, a slightly different spot, one time a year. And he's such an unmistakable deer. Like, well, there he is again, taking his yearly trip through.
Yeah.
Never have seen him since. No idea where this deer comes from or goes to. Just super weird.
Yep. Yeah, man, they're hard to figure out sometimes, that's for sure. Who knows where they're coming from, you know?
Oh, no. And in certain deer, I'll try to chase it, but like, and you don't know. I mean, it could
you don't know.
5 miles away for all you know. So you could be chasing that thing forever and losing your mind over nothing, over something you're never gonna find.
Yep. No, I think you're right. And like they've done deer studies with collared bucks where they've gone like 100 miles.
Is it the Missouri State University that does that?
Yep.
I love looking at that stuff. That stuff is fascinating.
There was one in New Hampshire too. They collared one that went like a crazy distance like that.
I'm so happy that Hercules didn't do that. Oh my gosh, I couldn't even. If he just up and moved 50 miles away, I'd be pretty upset about that.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, hey, every buck's different, I guess, and some are a little more adventurous than others.
Yeah. No. And I mean, I've had deer just disappear. You know, I don't know if this is something that's happened to you, but like, I mean, I guess you assume that maybe they died, but
yeah.
Like the buck I was after before we found Hercules' side was a big, he was originally an 8-pointer, turned into a 10-pointer, like 150-inch, super tall. The was defining feature was always, he always had super tall brow tines, like 7-inch, 8-inch candlestick shooting way up. And then he ended up having a kicker the last year I knew him, and I was hunting that deer hard. Mm-hmm. And I never had an encounter with him. I never once had an encounter with him. I tracked him once, and I ended up – I didn't. This was the first day I had him on camera. I went up to my camera and went, oh, those are big tracks, and I followed the tracks instead of checking the camera, which was probably a good decision because I had never seen deer tracks that big. This deer is just a big-body deer. Hunted him hard. My dad ended up finding his match set, actually, Ryan had missed a shot at him. He's probably pissed I said that, but he had a shot at him. He missed him, and then he took off, and we never saw him again after that. My dad found his sheds, and I'd never have gotten him on camera any of his historical spots ever since. I have no idea what happened to him. He made it through the season. I know he did.
Really?
Never got him on camera again.
Well, maybe some old timer shot him and just cut him up and threw the antlers on the workbench and called it a day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. It's the fact that we got them sheds from that last year, you know?
Right.
There are so many guys out there, old-timers especially, that they don't post their deer. It doesn't matter how big it is.
Exactly, yeah.
So you do wonder.
Yeah. Hey, but you had no pictures of them the next year either?
Not at all. Not one.
He could have died in the winter.
I got him relatively. That's my hypothesis. Yeah. I mean, and maybe he's still out there and he just shifted. I mean, that's the tough part.
That could be too, yeah.
Right around the time where I lost track of him is when Hercules came around, so I wasn't hurting too bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either. Man, what a buck. Again, I just want to say, you know, congratulations. That thing is I'll post pictures of him on the Instagram page. To promote this episode, and if you guys aren't following that Instagram page, go look at it, the Big Buck Theory on Instagram, and it is just he's a jaw-dropping buck, just all mass, just a freak, you know.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, he's just a freak.
Freak of nature.
He's one of a kind. Do you want to plug in your socials and you guys are doing are you doing an Instagram page with a bunch of your buddies or a YouTube channel or what are you guys?
Yeah. Well, so that's kind of in the works. We've got the page running. My personal page that I came up with when I was probably 16, 17 years old is Northeast_Outdoors_Co.
Yep.
Now, I'm not a company. I don't sell anything. I just at the time I thought it sounded like a cool name and it kind of stuck.
Yep. Yep.
But what my buddies and I are doing is we've made a page just for, because Northeast Outdoors kind of became my own personal thing.
Yep.
And it wasn't meant to be at first, but it ended up becoming it. And so we wanted a page just for, you know, for all of us to post everything we're up to and all the fun we're having, whether it's goose hunting, deer hunting, turkey hunting, duck hunting, you name it.
Yep.
Oh, and so that is called Deep and Steep Outdoors. Mm-hmm. On Instagram. And we're going to try it again to filming. I think we're going to try to film some turkey hunts this spring. I used to do the filming. It's tough, man.
Yeah, it's hard.
I want to get back into it. I never had a good enough camera to do it. I had a camera that didn't auto zoom and didn't auto focus.
Really?
And so if I was doing it solo, it was a nightmare to try to set it up for a kill shot or something like that. I just gave up on it.
Yep. I hear you.
I need a better camera.
Not easy.
We'll be posting some stuff up on that page. And we try to keep it fun.
Yeah. Cool. Cool, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on and telling your story. It was cool to hear because I hadn't heard the story yet, and he's a giant buck, so very cool.
I really appreciate you having me on. Really honored to, honestly, with so many guys that came before me on this podcast, shot quite a few more big bucks than I have. So I'm really honored to be in the same company as them.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, you made some great decisions in the woods that day, and it paid off. So
I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll catch you on the next episode.